Welcome to episode 17 of Old Stories, New Information. I'm your host, Brent Colley, and on today's episode, I'll be rolling solo once again for the same reason as episode 15. There aren't many people well-versed in this topic, and that topic is Mark Twain in Russia, his travels to Russia, his thoughts about it, his impact, his connections, both privately and professionally. So my story is, I made a visit in 2007 down to the Mark Twain Library in Reading to pick up some photos for a calendar project. It was a 100-year anniversary thing. And all I knew about Mark Twain in Russia at that moment was that he had visited the Ukraine, Yalta, and Odessa, and he had met a czar. And that came from his book, The Innocents Abroad. And in that book, he writes the following about Odessa. I have not felt so much at home as I did when we raised the hill and stood in Odessa for the first time. It looked just like an American city, fine, broad streets and straight, low houses, wide and neat, and free from any quaintness of architectural ornamentation. Locust trees bordered the sidewalks. Looking up the street and down the street, this way or that, we saw only America. There was not one thing that reminded us that we were in Russia. So The Innocents Abroad, also known as The New Pilgrim's Progress, is very important to the story of Samuel Clemens, a.k.a. Mark Twain. This trip created what we now know and marvel at, the legendary Mark Twain. So in 1867, Mark Twain departs from New York Harbor on a steamship named the Quaker City for a 5.5-month excursion with stops in Europe, the Holy Lands, Africa, and Russia. And his role was a newspaper reporter to cover this trip. And his humorous, opinionated, and often revealing observations of all the local sites and inhabitants first appear as a newspaper report in letters of a San Francisco newspaper. And then 2 years later, that collection became this first book. And The Innocents Abroad catapulted Twain into international fame. He sold, 82,000 copies in the first 18 months. And then that would double over the course of the next decade. And in addition, it really triggered a lot of people to visit the countries that he had reported on. So I thought that was really cool. But what's most important about this trip is that on it, he meets a guy named Charlie Langdon. And the reason why Elmira, New York, Buffalo, New York, Manhattan, Hartford, Reading, and many other places connected to Mark Twain, why that's important to them was that because he met Charlie, they became friends. And at some point along the way, Charlie shows him a photo of his sister, Olivia. Olivia, or Livy, became an obsession from that point for Sam. And although it took a great deal of effort on his part, they would eventually marry in February of 1870. Now, I say eventually because she initially turns him down. And that produced one of my favorite Mark Twain quotes. And it's, love is a madness. If thwarted, it develops fast. And he worked really hard soon after she turned him down eventually. And, he eventually wins her heart. Now, Livy's family lives in Elmira, New York. And soon after their nuptials, they would move to Buffalo for a short period. Her father had bought Sam and Livy a house and gave him a newspaper of his own in Buffalo. Then they move on to Hartford from there and yada, 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 worldwide travelers from that point forward. But without Livy and her family's wealth, his life story is completely different than what we know it today. So that's all background information. Now, let's jump ahead to my visit to the Mark Twain Library in the spring of 2007. So I was planning a photo calendar to celebrate the 100th anniversary of his arrival in Reading. I had purchased 9 images from the Hartford House, and I was looking for 3 more at Reading. I got them, but I also got a lot more. The a lot more was knowledge of someone just like me. His name was Bradley Kelly, who was working on his own project to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Twain's death in 1960. Now, he definitely went way bigger than my calendar idea. what he was doing at that moment in time was trying to bridge an understanding between the USSR and the United States via Twain. In his notebook that we found, he wrote, "I'm hopeful that the down-to-earth American humor and satire of this great writer will help pierce the Iron Curtain." So how he kind of set that off was he sent Mark Twain-themed issues of Reading's local paper at the time, the Reading Times, all over the world. The first one was sent celebrating the 50th anniversary of his arrival in Reading. That was sent in June of 1958. And the first country to respond was Yugoslavia. But it was the letter that arrived from Russia that confirmed all that Mr. Kelly previously believed about the Russians' interest in Twain, and it even added to it. The letter from the Russian vice chairman of the Committee of Cultural Relations with Foreign Country reads, "I fully agree with you that cultural communications between people of different countries is one of the surest mediums of maintaining peace. Mark Twain is immensely popular here amongst the Russian people. His works have been published and republished here in large editions." So their correspondence continues and eventually leads to a special European trip for Kelly and his wife. They would travel to Ireland, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and eventually the Soviet Union. And their trip plays really well into what Mark Twain wrote in The Innocents Abroad, and that is, "Travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness, and many of our people need it sorely on these accounts." What they found in these countries was incredible, and it quickly erased preconceived notions of, you know, everything that they, you know, believed before because of what they saw and found. One of the most surprising finds for them was that there were over 3,000 libraries in Moscow alone. The largest Moscow library was the Lenin State Library. It had close to 20 million books. It was open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m., and on average, 7,000 people a day. They were avid readers. These Russians were avid readers. The highlight of the trip, though, was at the Lenin State Library, where they found a catalog file of Mark Twain's works that was 8 inches thick. Pamphlets and articles on Twain, you know, and hundreds of titles, but 20 million total books. 11 million of those books were Twain's translated books into 25 Russian languages. So Mark Twain was by far the Russians' favorite author, easily topping Hemingway, Faulkner, and Jack London. Russian scholars that they met with informed them that there was hardly a schoolboy that had not read The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, or A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. What the Kellys had discovered was a big surprise when they got back to America. The American scholars were amazed and said that it was the first time an American writer had been printed completely in two languages. Even more surprising was the fact that the number of Russian printings exceeded England and America's totals combined. So when asked Mr. Kelly why, you know, Russians loved them so much, he said, "It isn't merely government policy that makes Twain a favorite in Russia, more than any other American writer, of course. Twain hits the chords of the Russian people. The response to him there is remarkable." What they told him was that Twain to them was the voice of the little man, or as we call it, the common man. And because, you know, Twain's work are, you know, filled with satire and social commentary, you know, it's this side of Twain that it endeared the Russian people the most, and that makes total sense. I mean, in terms of writing about Russia, in 1890, he writes, "Of course I know that the proper way to demolish the Russian throne would be by revolution, but it's not possible to get up a revolution there, so the only thing left to do, apparently, is to keep the throne vacant by dynamite until the day when candidates shall decline, with thanks." So it's a pretty funny quote about it, and that's probably why the Russians really, truly loved him. Now, upon leaving Russia, Bradley Kelly noted that based on what they've seen, now that statesmanship and brinksmanship has been seemingly failing, maybe it's time to try Twainsmanship to ease the tensions of the Cold War. Now, on this tour, the Kellys paid their own way. They were basically the unofficial ambassadors of Twain. But in 1961, former President Dwight D. Eisenhower's organization, People to People, appointing them as members, and that made their expenses tax deductible. While in Moscow, Kelly suggests that the two countries exchange books so that people could see and touch them. And that idea was well received and very much embraced by all the Mark Twain memorials here in the U.S. So by December 1961, there were Russian and American books exchanged between four Twain sites: Reading, Connecticut, Hartford, Elmira, New York, and Hannibal, Missouri. And what's really cool is that these book exchanges would continue between the USA and Russia. The Mark Twain Library has eight titles in Russian and two in Ukrainian. It's also a neat fact that the former director, Heather Morgan, on the 100th anniversary of Twain's passing, Heather Morgan and her staff cataloged this very special collection and made it available to the general public. So what Brad Kelly had started at the 50th anniversary was completed at the 100th anniversary, and that's one of my favorite parts. Now, based off of this, in 2010, Heather and I were asked to present our findings on Twain in Russia at Boston University's Twain and Tolstoy Symposium. They had both died in 2010, so yet another 100th anniversary to celebrate the two authors, you know, one from America and one from Russia. Heather was a bit nervous because it was a stretch, but I assured her that because Tolstoy had written War and Peace and Twain had written The War Prayer, and by the way, you know, we had this great story about Brad Kelly, you know, we're going to pull it off, and we did. So it was the Russian books that we brought that really tied everything together at that symposium. Heather actually held up the Prince and the Pauper book as she spoke about her early days as a new librarian and how she found this box of them in storage. Heather was British, but I won't attempt my poor British accent here. She said, in 2002, when I became director, while prowling around my new library building, I discovered many boxes still needed to be unpacked. Most of them were stored in this musty basement of the original 1911 building. I realized some had been there for many, many years. One of these discoveries was a small collection of books by Mark Twain that had been translated into Russian. I looked them over. I was intrigued, but with so much else to do, I placed them in a cupboard and almost forgot about them. So several years later, I came across a file of these yellow press cuttings that told the delightful story of a local resident, Bradley Kelly, and his travels that led to a gift of books in Russian to the Mark Twain Library. On one of his visits, he took a message from the library, Mark Twain Library in Reading, to the director of the Leningrad Library, and the message was simple: let's exchange translations of Mark Twain's works. So now I had the answer to the mystery of the Russian books, and so I brought them out of the hiding, you know, in their dusty, dingy ways, and cataloged them, and they were finally returned to the library shelves. The cataloging was a challenge, as I knew nothing of the Russian language, but with the help of a friend, a Russian friend, and some excellent work by catalogers, our system headquarters, we managed very well. And the online catalog of the Mark Twain Library can be viewed now by anyone who visits their website. So needless to say, like, our presentation was a big hit at this symposium. And it kind of gave, like, Heather and me the positive push we needed to dig a little bit deeper into the topic of Mark Twain in Russia. So we contacted Twain scholar Barbara Schmidt. She has this amazing website, twainquotes.com, and within it is some really all the Mark Twain quotes that you want to see, but also she has a lot of good research. So she really provided us with a treasure trove of Twain and Russian material. And what we found was that he wrote a lot about Russia between 1902 and 1906. The czars and the royal family were often cursed, and the Russian Revolution was openly supported. The czar thing kind of surprised us because when he had visited Yalta on that trip, he met with Alexander II and had very kind words to say at that point about czars. Well, that apparently changed because in a 1906 speech at a dinner for Maxim Gorky, he was a Russian writer and Marxist, he said, if we can build a Russian republic to give the persecuted people of the Tsar's domain the same measure of freedom that we enjoy, let us go ahead and do it. We do not discuss the method by which that purpose is attained. Let us hope that fighting will be postponed or averted for a while. But if it must come, let it. Anyone who has ancestors in this country, when we were trying to free ourselves from oppression, must sympathize with those who are now trying to do the same thing in Russia. Now, Maxim Gorky responds to the speech soon after with, I was so glad to meet Mark Twain, the best-known man in Russia. I read his books when I was a boy, and they have dwelt in my memory. I regard this as a happy day because I have met him. I think he's a great man, always will. He's a force, a man who hits hard. Now, unfortunately, a majority of Twain's writings on Russia really didn't come out until well after his death. But one of the coolest connections we found on Twain and Russia were not books or speeches, but they were personal connections that we initially didn't realize until we started to spotlight that topic. Twain's daughter, Clara, married not one, but two Russians. Her first husband was pianist Osip Gabrilowitsch, and he was born in St. Petersburg. And her second husband was another Russian musician, Jacques Samusud. Now, Twain was really, really fond of Osip. In fact, they share a memorial stone in Elmira, New York, that reads, death is the starlit strip between the companionship of yesterday and the reunion of tomorrow. So, to tie Twain's daughter Clara to the start of the story, you know, about Mr. Kelly, in 1962, Clara wrote to Brad Kelly and said that she thought it was a superb idea to harmonize the Russians and Americans through their authors and any other possible means, and she offered heartfelt support for his great plan. Now, Heather and I both thought this letter from Clara was a great bookend to the entire story because, you know, the Mark Twain Library's biggest and most successful fundraiser was a concert held at his house in Reading, where he played the part of the master of ceremonies, and Clara, David Bisham, and they were the singers, and Osip would play the piano. And soon after that event, Osip, who had known Clara almost 10 years, proposed, and she accepted, and they were married at Stormfield, Twain's house in Reading, in October of 1909. So that was a really neat connection for us. Most recently, there was a Connecticut resident. He's an actor named Ken Richters, and he played Mark Twain and performed in Russia and the Ukraine for 3 weeks. I think it was 2013. It was a goodwill tour for the U.S. State Department. His travels retraced Mark Twain's original visits to Eastern Europe and chronicled the innocence abroad. His book that he wrote about is titled Not So Innocently Abroad, which is funny because initially, he wasn't really 100% sure if it was a real thing or a really clever way to off him for making fun of politicians for 30 years performing as Mark Twain. He survives, and the Russians loved him just as much as the original Mark Twain, and it is a great book. So there's a lot more to share on Twain and Russia, but I think I provided a good amount of information here on today's episode. It's a topic that not many people know about, but that's why I continue to share it. So, as we've noted in past episodes, there's an email account that you can write to, stories@robinhoodradio.com, and tell us what you think, tell us what you like, and we'll circle back and give you some more. So, until next time, be well and always do right. This will gratify some people and astonish the rest. Enjoy your week.
Old Stories, New Information with Brent Colley is produced at the studios of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.